this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. I am Dr. Kyle Stanley. I'm a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, a speaker, and a researcher. And I am joined with my good friend and your co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. It is just our passion. It's what we like to do. It's how we like to give back to our profession. And today, we're going to be talking about tackling the emotional toll of patient anxiety, how to maintain your own mental wellness while your patients may be having anxiety. I mean, let's be honest, our patients don't want to come see us. They're afraid of us. We're going to dive deep into this topic and expand on something that most people don't talk about, which is most people say, how does the patient feel? No one says, how does the dentist feel? And so, Martin, what are your thoughts on this?
No, I think it's a great topic. I think that it has a lot to do with reframing the way we think about things. I think it has to do with being more seasoned versus less seasoned as a dentist, i.e. experienced, and just kind of reframing things. I mean, it's kind of the life I live as a coach, regardless of the type of client that I work with. The body of my work when I work with somebody one-on-one is how they frame things and how they look at things. And a lot of the emotional toll that we take on is of our own doing, with certain exceptions like the anesthetic one that I know you'll cover. But a lot of it we do to ourselves. And that's not a criticism or a judgment. It's just what it is we do. And if we can realize that, first step of your framework of Ripple, then we can go down the road of creating a different path for ourselves.
Yeah, with this topic, this was big for me in my downfall, and it's become a big topic in what I teach and what we teach together in Lightside Live. And that is, everyone is concerned about how the patient feels.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, that is just, and that is virtuous. And yeah, yes, we need to make sure our patients are comfortable. They have a great experience. However, everything is focused on just reducing the patient anxiety.
Yeah.
And no one talks about how does this affect dentists working on fearful patients every day for decades.
Yeah.
And for me, it took delving into the research and diving deep to get into some psychological research to figure out why I felt the way I did. One thing I want to bring up is something I call dental compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that's not what it's called in the research. They call it vicarious trauma. So vicarious trauma is something that you usually see in medical practitioners. You see in nurses, you see in therapists. And it's something that happens that is kind of like a PTSD symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it working with trauma victims. Now, I don't like to call our patients victims, but yeah, when you're working with someone repeatedly that is anxious, is having stress, to think that it doesn't affect you would be silly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. What is it? 36% of patients, based on certain studies, have a phobia of the dentist, a defined phobia. That's a pretty hefty chunk of our days there, folks, right? 36%.
Yeah, 36% of patients have dental anxiety.
Yeah.
12% have extreme dental fear.
Yeah.
Now, everybody listening to this, if you're a dentist or you work in the dental industry, you know this patient. Mm-hmm. They're the patient that cancels a few times before they come in. Mm-hmm. I like to see this, that when you have a new family come to your practice, usually it's the dad that sends the rest of the family first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, if they survive, then the dad will come in, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you have 12% of patients that have extreme dental fear. So if you're seeing 10 patients a day, which almost everybody is,
mm-hmm.
at least one of your patients has extreme dental fear.
Yeah.
These are the people that are sitting in the chair, white knuckling the chair, sweating coming from their head, right? And you take their blood pressure and it's 279 over 180. And they say, oh, I'm really healthy. And I just ran a decathlon. And, well, this is extreme dental fear, right?
Yes. And what I would say to you also is the following phrase that I invite everybody to think about, which is this: people do the best they can with the skills they have at the time. And yes, 100%, I would say, I doubt there's any research on this, but I would say most of the time the fearful ones are as you describe, but there's also the folk that lash out due to their fear, right? My assistant knew when I was in practice almost 10 years, I had to do this, it was either two or three times. It certainly wasn't more than three, where we were seeing a new patient, they were there. One I remember was just an evaluation examination. The other was definitely emergency, and they just were nasty. And so I did this two or three times and it worked like magic. I sat the patient up. I took off my gloves kind of in front of them. I put them down very, very gently. And I said, "Now, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, what is going on here? I have never met you before in my life. You've come to my office to seek care for this particular condition. And there is an overwhelming amount of hostility that you're expressing toward myself and my assistant. What is going on?" And I literally shut up. And you wouldn't believe it, literally completely lowered their guard instantaneously. And what was the nidus of this? Fear, right? And we have to be careful not to kind of take that on. Before you and I hit record, I was sharing that in the first coaching program I did for my certification, they taught us this concept of, I've heard it done two ways from this institution, like not getting in their bag or not getting in their issue box, like tissue box. I think that's kind of cute. I had the bag version, but it's very true to be careful not to put yourself in their shoes from an emotional perspective, because that's when the PTSD, the vicarious trauma over time, all that stuff kicks in.
Yeah, and I think there's probably people that are listening to this saying, but don't you want to put yourself in others' shoes?
So, wow, I can't believe you just said that. So when I was interviewing for dental school, Dr. Bud Hawley, who I think is no longer with us, I think he passed away, he was a periodontist. I ended
Makes
up
me think of
working.
Weezer. Ooh wee, I look just
Yeah,
like Buddy
yeah,
Holly.
yeah, yeah. I actually worked for him as a junior, as an assistant. But anyway, he was part of the interview group, and he looked at me and he said, "Mr. Mendelsohn," he loved doing that Mr. because of course
Yeah,
we weren't doctors yet, right?
right.
He goes, "Mr. Mendelsohn, could you please define empathy versus sympathy for me?" And I looked at him, because for those of you who know my background, I worked in a dental office from the time I was 16. I looked at him and I said, "Well, Dr. Hawley," I said, "empathy," or no, I started off by saying, "I've never had a root canal before, but I know what they are, and I've observed what the patients go through. And so empathy would be employing my knowledge about that. Sympathy would be feeling it with them for them." And he just kind of like nodded his head and we went forward. But it isn't it interesting? It's an empathy versus a sympathy, right? And careful to not go to that line or go over that line.
So you are saying we should have empathy for the patients.
Yes.
We
Yeah.
should not have sympathy for the patients.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And what when you were telling that story, what I was thinking of is some of the research that I like to quote from 2014, and it also has to do with some of the stuff that I published recently in 2024 in Compendium about how dental fear and anxiety is really complex. It's multifactorial, it's exogenous, it's endogenous. You have things like past experience, their role models, the media, genetics, personality, intelligence. So that example that you gave with that patient that was being very hostile towards you, who knows? Maybe their parents were afraid of the dentist. Maybe they had some genetic predisposition to having fear in the dental office.
And maybe that's the way they live their lives. Something doesn't go well at the department store. They feel like the way they're going to get their the method with which that will serve them is to lash out and yell and be nasty. But not my chair. Sorry.
Yeah, I think what's hard for dentists is that we are so hyper exposed to dentistry, of course, every day. And it took us, 8 to 12 years or so to go through dental school and residency, that it's so normal for us to hear a tooth break. For example, I remember the first time a tooth broke in dental school, I jumped just like the patient jumped. Now, over time, you hear a tooth break, you didn't even think about it, But a lot of that has to do with that exposure. And many times we forget that patients only go to the dentist maybe every 6 months, maybe twice a year. And just like you said, this is their first time having a root canal. They never had one. They don't even know what it is. Are you removing the root? What, how does it work, right?
You bring up a fantastic point because, part of my teachings is verbal and listening skills, or listening and response skills, I guess would be a better way to put it. And when I teach listening skills, there's three different varieties. There's subjective, objective, and intuitive. Subjective is seeing it through your lens. Objective is seeing it completely as if you're them. And intuitive is reading between the lines. And so I have a more secular example that I use to describe each of the three. But one of the ones that I use with dental groups is this one. Patient comes into the chair and says, I'm really nervous about this root canal, this crown, this whatever. A subjective response would be, you know what? I used to be really afraid of that too, but I had one and Dr. Mendelsohn is fantastic. You have nothing to worry about. Did we address their fears at all? Heck no. And so if we can be empathetic and realize, okay, they just told me they're worried. They just told me they're concerned. And guess what? They're sitting in the chair. And we can flip that to a more intuitive response that's empathetic, which would be something like, it sounds like you're really, really concerned about this. And maybe, and you've had a previous experience, as I displayed in my example, and you've had a previous experience. We're here to help you in whatever way we can. What concerns you most? Right? So you're being empathetic to their situation, you're listening to what they're saying, you're acknowledging and validating what they're saying, but you're not necessarily agreeing with them or disagreeing with them.
Yeah, you're not poo-pooing
You're
their
being in their
thoughts,
space.
right?
You're holding the bag, you're not getting in it or not getting in the issue box, so to speak.
Well, I think we forget too that the dentist is one of the biggest fears in the world.
Yeah, 100%.
There's some research to show that public speaking is number one. Yay, you and I beat
Yay.
that.
Woo-hoo.
Woohoo! Number two is the dentist in this specific research. And number three is death. But we have patients that would rather die than come to see us. And
Absolutely.
so we shouldn't be surprised when at least one of your patients has extreme dental fear and at least maybe three or four of your patients per day have a lot of dental anxiety. But I love what you're talking about with a verbal framework. Because again, this is a skill. Like you have this skill. I don't even have this skill, right? But you have this skill about, and maybe this is something we should teach in Lightside Live too. And by the way, Lightside Live is coming up May 9th and 10th. So make sure you go to wellnessanddentistry.com. Join us for that 2-day workshop. Super transformational. Martin and I have a ton of fun. And there's going to be a yacht party. So if you've never been on like a 120-foot yacht, then come. It's included. And we're going to go around Newport Beach, the harbor there. So anyway,
Come for the yacht, stay for
that's
the
right. Yeah. That's right. Come for the yacht, stay for the learning. I like that.
Oh, that's funny.
You are giving people a skill here that they could use 3 or 4 times a day.
And so something I've never thought of before, Kyle, is this. I mean, think about empathy versus sympathy. Let's turn the equation just ever so slightly. This happens all the time. Patient comes in and they're strapped for financial resources. There's a difference between empathy and sympathy. And if it's empathy, it's like, wow, they're really in this difficult place. We're going to give them as many options as we can to allow them to choose what's best for them. If they can't make it work, they can't make it work. Versus, oh my gosh, I feel so sorry for them. This is terrible. I need to do it for free.
Let's discount it. Let's do it for
Yeah.
free. Yeah.
I think it's an interesting, different type of example of the same construct. It just ends up more of an outward action versus an internal burden of potentially vicarious trauma and PTSD.
Yeah, when you give that example, it makes me go back to something that I like to talk about, which is having a with or without you attitude in dentistry. Yes, we want to help our patients. Yes, we would love for everybody to be able to afford it and to make dentistry a priority, but sometimes they don't. And we have to have a with or without you attitude, and we need to protect ourselves in this too. I think about this with my wife. You know, my wife is a very, I think empathetic is the right word, person, to where, and correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but she'll have a friend that, let's say, went through trauma. This friend will tell her. Now the friend feels better, and my wife suffers for the next 3 weeks. Would that be empathy? Would that be sympathy?
It sounds like she's empathic, meaning, she takes on those emotions. I think it's a whole nother level. I think it's, empathy would be, well, that's a really challenging time for them. I feel really difficult. Maybe there's something I can do. The keyword being maybe, the more sympathetic emotional responses, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I can't get this out of my head, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and I've seen it time and time again, and like I want to tell her friends sometime, like, don't tell Brianna this stuff because she suffers from it. And what's funny is like the friends feel better. And I see this with dentists too, is that the dentist just takes on the patient's pain and worry. The patient may feel better. And again, this sounds very virtuous. And wow, you are such an amazing professional for doing this with your patients. But it's not sustainable. You can't do that over time without having the built up vicarious trauma. And one thing I didn't mention with the previous research on vicarious trauma is the more time you're exposed to these trauma patients, the more vicarious trauma you have, and the more burnout you have is direct link.
Absolutely. And I'll bring something else to the equation that you and I didn't even talk about in our pre-hitting the recording button conversation, which is this. We do this with our team too. And we want to avoid these difficult conversations like nobody's business. When people are in a bad mood, we take it personally. We wonder if it's our doing, et cetera, et cetera. And we end up getting hit from all sides. We get
True.
hit from the patients, we get hit from our teams. If something's going on at home, we're getting hit from home. No wonder the statistics of our lack of mental wellness are where they are. Like, holy smokes, no wonder. And so the learning of how to navigate through the empathy, sympathy element with your team as well is critical. And frankly, skills are skills, right? We were talking about before this. I have a really good friend named Steven, who's an IT, who runs basically a geek squad kind of company for small businesses. He listens to our podcast all the time. And he's like, it's all dentist stuff, but it's totally applicable to what I do. And it's true. It's absolutely true. And so anything that we're going to talk about relative to patients, there's a lot of analogous information to how we do with teams as well.
Right. Or you could just even call that, like for your friend's life, instead of patient, you put customer,
Yeah,
right?
totally.
And that's the only
Totally.
difference.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, understanding that removing the pain from the patient and taking it on myself isn't sustainable was a big step for me.
Yeah.
Because what I learned was having sympathy and empathy and release cortisol in your body.
Yeah.
Even if you
Totally.
just have empathy and you're doing it the right way, let's say,
Right.
you're still releasing cortisol. And so from a, I don't know if it's physiological, but maybe physiological realm. We have stress hormone. Stress
Yeah.
hormone does what? puts you in fight or flight, high blood pressure, risk of vessel rupture. We have some research showing that when you give injections, your blood pressure can go up to 20%.
That's so
how many injections do you give?
Yeah.
There's a lot of you listening that may say 40, 60 a day, even if you're a specialist, perhaps, or you do a lot of surgery or you do high volume.
Yeah.
So think how your blood pressure is constantly up and down and up and down. And maybe that's why you're so tired afterwards, because your body is trying to rest and digest.
Yeah.
But I think some of that for me was just realizing, understanding what's happening so that I could give myself some grace on why I feel the way I do.
Well, and so let's talk a little bit about a practical deployable tool. So this is discussed in therapy, and this is discussed in quite a number of books that I've read as well, where, you know, how can we embrace our emotions from a curious versus judgmental place? And the visualization that I've heard quite a number of times that really works for me is you visualize yourself sitting on the edge of like a slow moving river, a babbling brook, if you will. And your emotions are the water, and they're simply passing by. And you're literally saying to yourself, oh, that's interesting. There it goes. Now, is this very simple? 100%. Is it easy? Heck no, because it's a learned skill. And so oftentimes the example I give to people, which is a universal one that I know hits because I can see their facial reactions, is I say, okay, pretend you're in the car and you're driving to work and someone cuts you off. What do people typically say? That jerk or other expletives I'm not going to say on a podcast. And think about the emotional cost that reaction has. Everybody can feel their blood pressure go up or face get flushed, etc. Versus someone cuts you off and go, huh, I wonder why they did that. I don't even know if they saw me. I hope they get to work okay, and I'm glad I didn't get into an accident. They're both just as valid because you have no idea, no idea if that person saw you or not. And so what I say to people is think about sitting in the space when you say to yourself, that jerk, versus, huh, I wonder if they even saw me. So the idea here is how can we transfer this to our daily interactions with patients? So if we take back even the example of the hostile patient that I shared earlier, huh, I wonder why they're reacting this way, versus who do they think they are? This is my office. I've never even seen you before. Who do you think, you know? Think about the difference. I know everybody listening to us can put themselves in the place I just described and completely understand and embrace the difference in emotional toll between who the heck do you think you are versus I wonder why they're acting this way. And I am not being a pushover here. I described to you what I did. This is not about people taking advantage of me. This is about how I choose to engage. And Barbara Fredrickson, who developed the broaden and build theory, has clearly demonstrated that that positive thought action repertoires allow our brains to literally, quote, broaden and consider other options and opportunities. And so this isn't pie in the sky stuff. This is a tool, because if you feel stressed and burdened, then the question is going to become, what are you going to do about it? And so this and other things you can choose to employ and deploy to get yourself out of that place.
Yeah, I really love that. I like the idea of the babbling brook.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a devil's advocate question.
Oh, I love those. Go ahead.
You and I are good at throwing those back at each other too. I'm, you know, sitting by this babbling brook, and the patient's problems are rolling by.
Yeah.
The team's problems are rolling by.
Yep.
Am I just really dissociated from these people? Am I just so far removed that I'm just kind of a shell of a person, and I'm not even acknowledging something challenging that these people may be going through?
I would say no, because what we described is the you know, best case scenario, right? And so again, you know, at the risk of being a broken record, this is a skill. And so the happiness certification course that I took the majority of the course was talking about what does it mean to be happy? What is happiness? What is whole being? and it's described in the form of an acronym of the word SPIRE. And the E in SPIRE is emotional whole being. An emotional whole being and emotional happiness is allowing, you ready for this? Your emotions to run through and flow through and past you. So it's about allowing them to process through so that you can move forward. So it very well could be you need 5 minutes in your office to like stomp your feet when nobody's looking. And that's totally okay, because I'm glad you asked me this question, because what I am absolutely not saying is, you know, good vibes only, la, 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 la. No, 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 no. No. What I'm talking about is going, I wonder why that happened. Oh, I'm realizing that my tummy's grumbling. Or one of my coaching clients one time, his eyes would itch. Wow. What a unique physiologic response, right? I mean, he had like a bat signal, which was fantastic if you think about it. So I'm feeling this. What do I need to do to flow through and flow past this? And, you know, I'll quote unquote, I say this euphemistically, fight with anyone all day long about, you know, well, isn't that a little bit too pie in the sky or mushy gushy? And I'm like, fine, think that way and continue to suffer. That's your choice, right?
Yeah. In jiu-jitsu, we call that the river principle, which is kind of like let the water flow to the rock, and then the water will find a way around it. Whenever you're in a difficult situation, we talk about that in jiu-jitsu. And it's also making me think of self-mastery that we talked about before, I think a few episodes ago, maybe in 30 or 31, which is have the emotion, but don't act on the emotion.
Correct.
Because I think what I was getting at, the devil's advocate question I was asking you, is what many people say is, well, I need to be true to myself, though. If I'm having that emotion, like that is me, what I want to have. And I think you and I both would say, have the emotion. The emotion.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Be true to that emotion, but don't act on the emotion.
Yep. 100%. 100%. Yeah, it's. You know, I've often been asked as well. I was asked this week, you know, what happens if you misstep? And my answer was, fine. Life is a journey, not a destination.
Yeah.
If you know that you misstepped, that's a good day at the office, because
you have the awareness.
You have the awareness. And so this is, again, you know, my coaching program, I love this concept. You know, it's like we're exactly where we need to be. And there were behaviors that brought you to a given place that served you in the past. Yet, for various reasons and in various situations, they're no longer serving you, but they're our default. And so let's recognize that's our default, embrace that that's our default, so that we can move forward from our default, which I think is a beautiful concept.
I think it's a very dentist way of thinking too, is like this perfectionism. Mm. So once I learn this concept, I have to do this every single time. And listen, guys, I mean, Martin and I have been on this journey for a long time, and we still misstep, and we still go, oh gosh, I really screwed up in that situation.
Yeah.
But like Martin said, the important part is we have the awareness.
Oh, 100%.
If there's anything that Martin and I have, is we have step one, which is we realize when there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that, if that's all you get out of listening to this podcast, that is a huge value to you.
Yeah.
Is just to have the awareness of knowing when you've made the misstep so that you can at least think about it, maybe look at ways to fix it, put time and money and effort, learn skills like we talked about today. To get better at it.
Yeah.
But thinking that you're never going to misstep on something is crazy. It's like saying every single one of your implants is going to integrate and look beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell everybody a story that just happened less than a week ago. And what I'm about to say is the absolute truth, 100%. So I'm on my way to LA, and my husband had to go to like an motor vehicle appointment, and he was going to try to get back to take me to the airport. He texts me, I'm sorry, I can't take you to the airport. I've just had an accident. Like, oh my God, are you all right? Like, what's going on? No, I'm okay. But, you know, it was my fault, blah, blah, blah. I was like, are you sure you're okay? Yeah. And he's like, I'm so sorry, I can't take you to the airport. I'm like that matters, right? And so I went to the airport, and it turns out a couple of days later, we find out what the car's totaled. Now, was getting a new car on my bingo financial card this year? Absolutely not. But truly, my thought process was, it's just a car. He's fine. We now both work from home, other than when I'm off in an airplane somewhere. Maybe this is an opportunity to go down to one car. Let's try it for 2 months and see what happens. But I am just so grateful that he wasn't injured. Ladies and gentlemen, I am telling you 100%, this was where my mind was. Now, when I first got that text, did my stomach drop and did my blood pressure rise? 1,000,000%. And this is a journey I've been on for now almost 10 years. So I'm in a different place. And what's the phrase? Don't compare your step one to somebody else's 100.
Yep, that's right.
but I wanted to share that story because it's moments like that that have a very serious emotional component to it that prove to me that the hard work and skill development that I've engaged in, as you have, over years, it does work. End of story.
So true. And you could take that story and instead of insert a text from your husband saying that the car is smashed and he got in an accident, have it be a patient that
Yeah.
says, the
100%.
crown broke.
Yep.
Now,
Yeah.
of course, the patient may be more frustrated, more angry, whatever, but the way that you took on the situation had emotions but didn't act on them, perhaps, and went forward with positivity. I mean, listen, people, every time a patient has texted you or called you that's been mad, you've survived it. If you're
Every
listening to
time.
this,
Every time.
you have survived it, right? And I was one of these people that always went to catastrophe on this. Patient's going to write a negative review. They're going to sue me. I'm going to lose my license. I'm going to lose any status I have in the world. My wife's going to think I'm a loser. I always catastrophized this.
Yeah, say that five times fast.
It's a skill, and I
It
see
is.
this skill with me so often now, just with parenting. Just with parenting. I mean, my daughter didn't want to put her dress on the other day, and so she's like screaming and trying to scratch me, and my wife and I are sitting there, and we're just kind of laughing and helping each other doing it. But a few years ago, like she's two, when my son was two, 6 years ago, I would have been freaking out and I would have been yelling at her and stop and da da da. I became a different person.
Well, and I think that goes to the power of groups and collegial networking and study clubs and so forth. I mean, if you're a younger dentist or a less, I like to use the term less seasoned now that I've turned 55. If you're a less seasoned dentist, find a more seasoned dentist and talk about how they've handled these situations. Now, is every seasoned dentist handling them well?
No.
No. But find somebody that works for you, that
Yeah.
you connect and mesh with. And if you're a more seasoned dentist and you've gone down that road, give back. I mean, our mutual friend Noreen gives back all the time because
Yep.
he went down his challenging road and now gives back to others. And so, whichever side of the bike you're on there, folks, either seek out or offer the help because, as you say, my friend, nobody understands a dentist like a fellow dentist.
Yeah. I remember, talking about an older seasoned dentist, or not older, a seasoned dentist that was giving me advice for one was one of my business partners, Mark. And, he's, gosh, I don't know how old he is now, in his late 60s, maybe. But he was in his early 60s when we first bought the practice. And I remember there were cases where I was very excited about doing them. And yeah, and he would hear me talk to the patient. And I would come back to treatment plan in the back office, and he would go, Kyle, I would recommend not treating that patient. It's like, Mark, what are you talking about? Like, it's a full mouth case. This is, and she loves me, and da 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 da. And he was like, I heard some of the things she was saying, and I've been in some of these situations and had to learn the hard way, but I don't think I would take that case. Now, me being a pompous, ego-driven, less seasoned doctor, took these cases on, and guess what? These are the ones that caused my big breakdown. I mean, this one case I'm talking about is one of my three events that you and I talk about at Lightside Live. So it's funny how, hindsight is 2020. And when you have the right seasoned dentist, that you can really learn a lot from them.
Well, and I will tell you this, and it's funny where my brain went to, because we've already made this statement in this podcast and others that, we're not unique. We're just people, and what drives people drives dentists. And I can tell you, the same thing goes for all of you, ladies and gentlemen. When you contact me and you're looking for coaching, there are red flags that I see, and they are really consistent. And they don't follow one type of person. We're not talking about, segregating people by type. No, this is by action. And I can spot it from a mile away. And I'm like, nope, they're never going to get back to me. They're never going to work with me. Or if they do, I'm going to self-select out. And I can see it from a mile away. And so we are not unique. We are human beings, just like our patients are human beings. And ironically enough, we act similarly, whether we like it or not. We just do. So.
So let's get back on this topic of protecting ourselves from the patients that have anxiety, all while supporting them through this journey. But let's try to put a bow around this and give some of
So
our final
I would
thoughts.
say that there's a couple different layers here. We're talking about skills, and in the mental health realm, if it's truly something that you're ruminating over, can't get out of your head, no matter what it is you do, that would certainly be an appropriate time to engage a licensed mental health professional, therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, et cetera, because that was one of the big red flags in my coaching program. If you got constant rumination that they can't get over, that they can't do anything with, that's a huge sign for
That's not coaching.
that's
That's
correct. And I'm very staunch on that. So I guess what I'm saying is understanding and looking for those cues, those physiologic cues, thinking to yourself, okay, so when I get riled up, where does it show up for me in my body? To understand, to realize when you're getting into that place, to engage as best you can, even if you falter, but yet then still recognize what are those triggers, and thinking about the emotional reaction from a curiosity place, not a judgmental place, and literally kind of employing a, huh, that's interesting mantra, so that you can kind of detach from the moment and picture those emotions kind of going by you in a babbling brook. Realizing that utilizing a secondary tool of, I'm going to sit here and recognize that people do the best they can with the skills they have at the time, and this behavior is the best they can do. It may not be your best, but it's their best. So those are some pretty discernible tools. Being present in the moment, being curious about your emotions, realizing where it's showing up for you in your body, having grace that when you do physiologically react, that you have the ability to go, I'm reacting right now. What do I really need to do right now to bring me out of this space? It might be walk away for 5 minutes. It might be to be even more curious, to ask open-ended questions. Mrs. Jones, it sounds like you're very concerned or very upset about what's going on right now. What is really driving this? What are your biggest concerns? What are you most concerned about? Et cetera. Now, the open-ended question will depend on the situation, but those open-ended questions are just, they're miracles, because they force the person to really dive into what it is. Now, I'll give y'all one kind of advanced warning, if you will. If you were to ask a patient just kind of out of the blue or in the beginning of this kind of interaction, why are you feeling this way? The answer you're going to get is the story them tell they're telling yourself. Sorry. The answer you're going to get is the story they are telling themselves in their head,
Okay.
which could even be all dentists or shysters.
Right.
But that's not okay. So it sounds like there's a distrust of dentists. What has happened with you in the past that's caused this?
So how would you ask that question to be more general? Someone's very scared, have anxiety, maybe they're this extreme dental fear patient. What is like a very general question that you would ask them that's open-ended?
So, if I'm understanding the scenario right, there are some very there are some visual cues that are irrefutable, like they're sweating and you're seeing them white knuckles. So I would start with the factual
Facts.
observation. It's like, look, Mrs. Jones, I can see there's a bit of perspiration going on. I can see the whiteness of your knuckles. It's very clear and evident that you're gripping the chair very tightly. What's going through your mind right now? Could be as simple as that.
Yeah, it's
What's
very
going through
general.
your mind? Right? Because see what I did there? What I didn't do was ask a more leading judgmental question. What I didn't say was, what's bothering you? What are you
Why are
worried
you
about?
so f afraid? Yeah.
What I said was, what's going on in your mind right now? Now, it took me a long time to be able to discern the difference between those two, but think about it. If you were to say to somebody who's not willing to admit it to you because they're not comfortable with you yet, what's going on with this fear? I'm not afraid.
Yeah, right.
Right? But if you said to them, what's going on in your head right now?
Yes.
There's a greater chance that they're going to turn around and go, well, I'm just really fearful of the dentist. Oh, well,
Tell me more about that.
I very much appreciate you shared that with me. Your fear is very evident to me, so I very much want to honor the fact that you just shared that with me. What do you think is driving your fear? Or what do you, I think I would rephrase to what are you most fearful of, right?
Yeah, and now you can say fear because the fact from her.
Yeah. And notice what I just did too. Did you see how I changed the question in midstream? You can always do that because nobody knows what it is you're going to ask. And if you ask something and you want to rephrase to a different question, do it. They're not going to
Yeah.
remember the first one, trust me. And
Right.
so I do that all the time. And that was a big stress reliever, even for me as a coach interacting with people. It's like, no, you know what, Kyle? I'm sorry. I want to ask it
Let me
you
ask that in a
this
different
way.
way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would add to what you're, first of all, I loved what you were saying. And I would add that to not take on the patient's anxiety and fear on yourself, take someone who has separated themselves from their profession and know that when you're in your practice, you are Kyle the dentist, you are Dr. Stanley. However, when you walk out the door and you take off the white coat, you're just Kyle. You're just dad. You're just mom. You're just whatever. And so, my advice with that would be that person may have fear or anxiety associated with you, the dentist. That's not associated with you, the person.
Oh, 100%. Well, I've never asked you this before, but I bet I know the answer to this. How many times have you been talking to a non-dental person? They find out you're a dentist and they're like, oh, you don't seem like a dentist.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, and think about what that means. It's simply because you're interacting with this person on a more humanistic level.
Right. It's not fear-based. It's not in the practice. It doesn't smell like Eugenol.
Now, for whatever reason, I've also had people go, you look like a dentist. I don't know what that means, but you know, I don't know. Are all dentists short? You're not. So
Well, I think this is a good finish for us. The truth is that every day you're going to be in an environment of fear. You're going to have, research shows 30 to 40% of your patients that having dental anxiety. You're going to have at least 10 to 12% of patients that have extreme dental fear. And if you want to do this job for decades on end, like most of us do, if you're going to be in clinical practice, you need to learn how to manage the patients and manage the separation, the wall that doesn't affect you long term. And it's a balancing act, like anything else is in life and in dentistry, is that yes, you want to be empathetic to the person.
Yes.
You want to make them feel comfortable. You want to give painless injections. You want to give them a great experience. But at the same time, you don't want to suffer from vicarious trauma or dental compassion fatigue.
Yes.
So that it affects your next patient.
And what I will add to that is 1000% yes, and no one set a magical time frame for this journey for you as an individual. If you can improve even 1% a day, that's a good day.
That's
because
huge.
one will forever and always be greater than zero.
That's
So
right.
if we can at least, and sometimes those days, Kyle, right, will just simply be realizing you went to that space. And that's progress too. So we're all overachievers. Don't put this unrealistic time frame that in a week I'm going to be better. It's a journey.
Yeah.
It's a journey. So.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about what Martin and I do, whether it's Martin's coaching or his new book coming out, either of our online courses, go to wellnessanddentistry.com. Go to our links. You'll also find there our link to our two-day workshop that we call Lightside Live. That's going to be May 9th and 10th in Irvine, California at Glidewell. And yes, we're going to have a yacht party. So bring your yacht attire. It's going to be May in California. It's going to be really beautiful. Not
True.
like how it was in our last one. It was fairly cold on the yacht.
Yeah.
But
We'll still pretty.
We would love to meet you in person. It's one of our greatest joys to do these live courses. So if you're interested in anything that we do, go to wellnessanddentistry.com and we will see you guys on the next episode.
See you soon.